Welcome you today. We have a really great opportunity to have a conversation with Walter and Gail Lynn. And my name is Todd Arnett, lead pastor here at Trinity. And we put these podcasts together for an opportunity to be an encouragement to you while we're doing a series called 1 + 1 = 1. We're talking about the oneness concept that is so important in our marriages and what we see from God's word. So we wanted to see that fleshed out a little bit with our friends Walter and Gail. So I have a few questions for them. We're just going to have a great conversation. Welcome, you guys.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're here today. First one, I'd just like to know a little bit, just generally, so it kind of sets the stage for people listening, for those who might not know you. Tell us a little bit about how long you've been married. Tell us a little bit about your children. Just kind of a big picture of your family, and then we'll dive into some more specifics.
We've been married 45 years, almost 46 years. We have 3 children and 10 grandchildren.
Yeah. That's awesome.
We married right after graduating from college, and we were both brand new Christians. We'd been Christians for about a year, so we didn't know what it was like to have a Christian marriage. We had not seen that modeled. And we prayed, we were talking this morning, we prayed this audacious prayer the first month of our marriage, that our marriage would be a model Christian marriage, whatever that was, and that God would use our marriage to bless others. We were laughing about that this morning.
And here you are today. Not as though this is the first time either.
No, but that 45 years later, yeah. I can still remember that prayer.
We've had many, many opportunities to share how we came to know Christ, which is really just in itself miraculous. I made a decision for Christ in Dallas, Texas, all by myself, and prayed that evening that the Lord would give me the words that I could share with my girlfriend, Gail, that I would like to have a Christian relationship. And the very next day, in another town, at the University of Texas at Arlington, someone else led her to Christ.
Wow. Yeah.
The very next day. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty neat.
Well, tell me this. This is my next question. You kind of touched on it. When we think of our marriages, often we begin, at least, out of examples that we've had, good or bad. And so I was wanting to help frame this a little bit today. Tell us a little bit about the examples you watched growing up. They could be in some ways exemplary, in other ways not, but just how to, and maybe even turn that corner to how did that frame how you initially related to one another in your marriage?
Yeah, boy, we could talk for hours. Excuse me. We did not grow up in Christian families. We grew up in good families, hardworking people, and
church-going families,
and dysfunctional at the same time. And so one of our prayers as a young couple were that we would be a transitional couple, that there were certain things that had kind of been handed down to us from generation to generation, that we wanted this to be the ones who stand up and say it stops here. But we didn't want to hand those things down to our children.
But our families, they were committed. We saw a commitment in marriage that I look back now on and say that was a great model. It was a great gift. Both of our fathers were alcoholics, and our moms really were committed to making it work and making it through that. Even though there are troubles, you can be committed that way. We had completely different communication styles. His families were yellers. Mine were retreaters. So we had to work through that. Expectations of role and roles. We had to work through that. We had to work through a lot of that, lot of things like that.
That's helpful for people listening, you know, now too, that because they're processing on two fronts. One is sometimes there's a camp who would say, I'm kind of doomed to do what my parents did, and you're living proof that that's not the case. And there are others who would say, I had this bad example, and I don't know what good can come of it. And one of the things that we constantly are trying to bring up is that you can learn a lot from a bad example.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it's never wasted. It's just what, you know, now you know you need more, but at least you know what, in some areas, what not to do, right?
And, you know, and the older you get, the more you appreciate your parents in ways that you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I've outlived my father and all of my uncles and all of the men in my family by years now. And I understand them much better than I ever did back when they were alive, with all the stress that men have. And, you know, in that generation, there was a lot of drinkers in that generation, and a lot of what we would call today PTSD, post-traumatic mm-hmm. stress disorder, that I'm sure that's what our fathers suffered from.
Dealt with, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And alcohol was the drug of choice for those men back in those days.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't talk.
No talking.
They didn't talk.
Stuff.
Yeah. Hard workers. And great men and great fathers in all kinds of ways. But they just really didn't teach us what it meant to have a faith that was real. Mm-hmm. We had to learn that from other mentors, which is one of the great things. The Lord, as soon as we committed our lives to Christ, we were just whisked off into all kinds of great relationships with other couples. And in my life, very strong men that just really came along beside me and taught me what it meant to be a man after God's own heart.
And I felt like the Lord reparented me as I was parenting our children,
yeah.
and having to say, I don't know how to do this the right way. He, as I was parenting them, he was reparenting me and learning
that.
That's
a cool picture.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, tell us this, give us a little bit, you were telling us a little bit more of kind of that time of coming to Christ. Back us up even a little further. How did you guys meet? And what were the things within that relationship? Where was a point at which you realized, I really want to marry this person? Tell us a little bit about that story. As Gail laughs.
Well, we were Sorority Sue and Fraternity Freds. And we would say that our deepest conversation was what party we were going to go to on Friday night. So we were not having these deep philosophical and theological conversations. We were pretty shallow, mm-hmm. pretty shallow people. And then our last year in college, you kind of hit panic mode. You know, oh, ooh, am I really prepared for the world? This was 72. I mean, we were having race riots and Vietnam riots and women's riots, and everything was a riot. And it just felt like a panic time, you know. So personally, I think we were doing that, but we weren't talking about it with each other. And Walter had messed around a lot academically, but was now in a new program that was kind of a second chance or third or fourth chance. And and like he said, he saw a fraternity brother that had changed and wanted that kind of relationship that this particular guy had with his girlfriend. And I don't know. I don't think I was even thinking about God. And somehow he just opened my ears and my heart, and this traveling evangelist was speaking on campus, and I was like, I heard the gospel. I had heard the gospel, but I really heard the gospel that day. Mm. And went, you mean God would take my sins and give me Christ's righteousness? What a swap. That was my thought. What a swap. Good deal, sign me up. And that's all I knew. My daughter at 4 knew more about Jesus than I did.
Yeah.
You know? And so I called Walter that day. Guess what? I just asked Jesus into my heart. And he fell off. He was sitting on a chair, like he fell off of it. And I was like, maybe I should have thought about that a little bit.
Was this a good, was this a good thing?
I don't know. And and that was when we started thinking, God may have something together, you know, for us together. Yeah. And it was then that we really started talking about marriage. I don't think we had ever talked about it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was in October of 1971.
Yeah.
We got married in August of 72.
Yeah.
And 1 week after we made that decision for Christ, I was invited to take over the leadership of a Young Life club.
How smart
in
was
Dallas.
That?
So a week after making that decision, I was leading 66 high schoolers, and we were just off to the races. And it really,
that makes you
I've
grow
never
quickly.
Had a chance to slow down since then. We got married and went straight to graduate school, and We started out right off the bat in youth ministries at a church in Lubbock, Texas.
But, you know, I think that was good for us. It got us out of all those old influences and put us in a new place where we started as a Christian couple.
And it was a fresh start.
It was a fresh start. And we were immediately discipled by a couple that had a wonderful marriage, but struggled, and they were honest. And they were discipling a bunch of young couples. And so we started out working through those things together.
That's great.
That's it.
Yeah, so in that sense, in your guys' journey, coming to Christ in of itself is amazing and powerful. But that also kind of had this now effect on your relationship, where you started thinking a little bit more thoughtfully about what this was. Are we just dating versus could this be, you know, what God has for me? And even that was a new thought, what God has for me, you know, before it was like, well, what do I want to do? So those were some of the headwaters.
And, you know, one of the best things about all of that was we knew each other as unsaved sinners. And we saw God's grace.
That transformation.
You know, I would really see him changing right before my eyes and knew that that was God doing that.
That's powerful.
It was powerful. Yeah. It was very powerful.
Would you say even welding in a way? Like, meaning it's one thing, let's say that I'm with someone and I'm watching their life and I have a, you know, if maybe they're a coworker or whatever, and I'm seeing transformation. But something about that front row seat, right, watching that, and then even maybe the way it even welds you together now as a couple, even pre-married, of this, God is real and he's doing something.
And we gave each other credit for that. You know, I see that you're trying. Mm-hmm. I see that you're before the Lord and wanting to change, and I see God changing you. Mm-hmm. It helped us to let each other off the hook.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of the things we did. We said, I know you can't meet all my needs. God's has to. And he said the same thing to me. And so it let us try and know that even if we failed, and we knew we would fail, it wasn't a letdown. We saw each other going this way instead of...
Yeah.
And I think some couples are surprised that they've married a sinner. Mm-hmm.
Well, and is it fair, back to expectations, that you didn't have a thought that they're on a trajectory of just going up, 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 you know, everything's just going to keep getting better. But yeah, it's a roller coaster,
it
right?
It is, yeah.
We had some real stressful times in the first 5 or 6 years of marriage that dealt primarily with financial stress. That was our biggest stressors back in those days. And then moving around and from one place to another.
School. Graduate school.
Graduate school was
then
very difficult.
Then going into full-time ministry. Then.
Yeah. But especially in the financial area, the Lord has just shown us, you know, for almost 46 years, that he's got that figured out. And it's always nice to look back and see how he's got it figured out. But
hard being in the middle of it.
We had some really tough times there. When I remember one time we'd been on in a faith-supported ministry for 7 or 8 years, and there was just no money, and there was no time to go back and raise more money, and we couldn't pay any bills. So I went to the church that we were attending at the time, and they had a cupboard with cans of food and boxes of cereal, and I left there that day with 3 or 4 boxes of groceries, or we wouldn't have had, and this is after we had children, we wouldn't have had any food to eat. And that was very humbling and just a tough thing to go through.
And yet, what it said to me, because I know how humbling it was for him to do that, was he would do anything it took to provide for his family. And in the midst of that, it was a very assuring time for me that I knew my husband was going to look after us. And it just made me grow in my respect for him even more. Even though, so it brought us together instead of...
Pulling apart.
Pulling apart.
No, that's powerful. That's neat. And probably not what you were expecting maybe would be a response on her part, right? Like this could almost feel the opposite. I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do or what I want to do, you know, to take care of you. But then the way that Gail saw it was, no, you'd do anything. Yeah. So even thing that's hard to do. Mm-hmm. No, that's great.
And he didn't make me do it. Yeah. He did it, you know, and that's what communicated it to me.
In our families, it might have been the moms who would have been the ones to do something like that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Growing up, that would have been the approach. Well, tell me a little bit about when you know, what we're kind of basing this series on is the idea of oneness. When you hear that idea of oneness and related to your marriage, describe that a little bit, meaning what does the term mean to you? What does it look like kind of on either daily basis or push come to shove moments? What is oneness for the Lynns?
I think when we really started discovering what that meant and started really sensing that it at a very deep, deep level was when we just decided we were going to develop an attitude of gratitude. And we've spent a lot of our marriage life, morning after morning, typically, just being thankful. Mm-hmm. So I would say thankfulness trumps fearfulness and trumps anger or even trumps deep grief or deep hurt. Because even as our pastor was saying the other day, you know, when you were saying the other day, that, you know, when you develop kind of this attitude of thankfulness under the worst kinds of circumstances, as Joseph did, then that really it's very transforming. So we really, I think for us as well, humor has been a big part of our relationship. We enjoy having fun.
Yeah.
We enjoy laughing together, hanging out with other people that enjoy having fun.
And we always made sure that we had us time. You know, even if we didn't have very much money, we had us time. You know, we got creative that way. We would go through when we were first married, we would go through the couches and find the change at the end of the month and go out and get an ice cream cone. Because that was because we were getting paid.
Then it creates the date night, yeah.
But I do remember a specific time. It was in our mid-30s. And we were talking about this earlier, that we shifted to a ministering in each other's lives switch instead of looking out, you know, for me, growing me, where I know I consciously, oh, this is a way I can minister to Walter. And he did the same. And it was about those mid-30s that we shifted. And to me, that's what oneness is. It's saying, how do I meet your needs the way you need them to be met, not the way I think they need to be met?
They should be met, yeah.
And I think that made a, you know, that's part of the growing through there. Mm-hmm. You have to discover how selfish you are first. Mm-hmm. And you do that as a parent. Mm-hmm. And you have to do that as a spouse, too, I think.
Let me ask you this question, because I was thinking about this a little bit for today, but I think even as we dive into this new series, is there any correlation, mid-30s would have been, your kids would have been, what ages, elementary?
Elementary. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just wondering, and I'm not trying to hypothesize that I know what I'm going to say, but would you say there's a correlation potentially to kids that aren't as dependent and needy with the ability to start thinking that way towards each other? Meaning, not to say, because I want to give hope, mm-hmm. I want to say that there's some parents in their 20s that are so just trying to keep it all together with mm-hmm. the demands that little children have, that they might wonder, is this ever going to get better? And is this going to give us as a couple more time to connect and whatever? And I wonder if somehow the stages of rearing kids and where they're at and what they need, how that affects us as a couple. That doesn't have to be a direct correlation. Do you think, though, that might have played any part in that?
I think some of it did. Because I think there were times when I'm taking care of a baby and nursing, you know, that he's a little jealous of all the attention
that,
you know, so there was that struggle. But in our mid-30s, Walter went back for his PhD to school. He was commuting to USC, had little ones at home. I think that was when for me, that was when it switched.
That's interesting. So could it even been the idea that the time that we have is even more, you know, it's really being stretched right now, so I'm going to be very intentional with it, maybe that.
And our kids had permission to be intentional as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
They knew that on the weekends they owned Daddy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I remember many of those weeks, and they were just really stressful because of graduate studies. And I was working full-time at the same time. I'd look forward to sleeping in, and the kids would show up. One of them would have my jeans, one of them would have my boots, and one of them would have a shirt or a hat. And they'd
and your
say,
wallet.
And my wallet. They'd say, here, Dad, you know, get up. You're taking us out to breakfast.
And I'd say, yes, I get to sleep in.
Enjoy.
Yeah. That happened a lot.
And they still remember that, and they laugh about that. Yeah.
That's great.
But I would say to young parents that are struggling with the difficulties of raising children, that those are very precious times. They're precious times, and they may not feel like they are.
Yeah.
They go by so quickly, you know, and I didn't like it when I was a young parent that people would say that to me.
Mm.
You know, you better enjoy it now because it's going to be gone real soon.
Don't wish away the stage.
So don't wish away the stage. Enjoy it as you're going through it. Mm. And things do change. Sometimes they get worse before they get better, but they're usually going to get better as long as you're hanging in there and doing the best job that you can.
I think a lot of people quit during the bad times before they get to the good times.
Yeah.
They don't get the opportunity.
Those kids move out, and then it's really...
Awesome. At least you're right, and I think that's really important that you would say, and I appreciate you saying that, Walter. I didn't like hearing that when I was a parent of toddlers and whatnot, but it doesn't make it not true, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't make it untrue. So it's that idea that for some of us, especially if we're struggling with trying to create that opportunity and connection with our spouse, don't get into the mode of thinking this won't change. It will. And I just have to kind of keep putting that mm-hmm. over and over into my head. Lord, this is a struggle for this season, but the season's going to change. It just will. There's no way it stays the same. And there'll be a new way to not only look to you, Lord, but also to my spouse. And that season will change as well. So,
and, you know, we get to benefit now because we get to see our children as parents who have the same struggles in raising children that we did. And they ask us sometimes for advice.
Or might even say you were right.
Yeah. And we get to help them raise their children, which mm-hmm. is just a real kick. It's a lot of fun.
You get invited in to that. Yeah, that's a big win. Mm-hmm. When we think about, so if we kind of define, these are some of the pictures of oneness in the Lynn marriage, what would you say have been some of the challenges to oneness? Where and we've mm-hmm. talked about some of them, maybe stages, raising kids, maybe stuff related to career and education. But generally, on that one-to-one level, what have been some of the challenges? Why this idea of being connected, being on, I would say it's even more than on the same page, because that just seems of agreement. It's not always about agreement, but it's the idea that we're for each other. That's maybe a way you said it earlier, Gail. We're for each other. What have been the things that have challenged that?
Well, we are complete opposites. When we first got married, anyway, on the Myers-Briggs or whatever it was, Walter gave me every psychological thing as he was going through school. We were completely the opposites. The way we communicated, I was a, you've got to figure out what's wrong with me. He was a, let's resolve it. Just the way we approach, I was the get the list done first before we play. He was, why, you might miss playing, you know? I mean, those were the kind of things that we would have to talk through and battle. But I think we came to a point where in our disagreements, we realized that the other one wasn't coming from a malicious intent. You know, it was just a different point of view.
Because you can begin to put those lenses on Ken.
Yes, you can. You're out to get me. And that we realized right away that was not. It was just different styles that we had to work through. And so seeing that that's my text.
That's okay.
You know, just seeing that okay, let's sit down and talk this out. Even if we still disagree, we're not, he's not the enemy.
Yeah.
I'm not the enemy. Our relationship was the most important thing. And we would say that out loud. Hmm. We would say, no matter what, let's go for the relationship instead of going for each other.
Yeah.
Would you say, I love that phrase, you know, initially opposites attract, and then in marriage sins, opposites attack, right? So you kind of see those challenges. But
that,
like
that
said,
was the big challenge.
Okay,
that's exactly, you know, it comes out of unmet expectations where you didn't do what I expected you to do. And the essence of it is I wish that you would act the way I would act if I live inside of your body, and you don't. And so we had to learn how to let things go. And stay out, we've always used the phrase, let's stay out of criminal court and stay in civil court.
Yeah.
Where we're not judging each other's intentions, as she said a minute ago, but we just see things differently. And we've learned to not be surprised by that because it's going to typically happen.
Yeah, almost won't expect that.
Yeah.
And the good news from that is that is the longer that we're together, the more we become alike. So we really do have a lot of the same thoughts nowadays, which is really the opposite of what would happen in the first 10 or even 15 years of marriage.
So those are good words for couples that would align with that. They would say, you know, we're talking about oneness. That's one of our biggest challenges, is that we just see the world so differently. Mm-hmm. Or we're on all the personality tests. We're so different. That would be some of the words of hope, is to say, on the one hand, be okay with the differences. Stop trying to judge intent and motive, and even stop trying to wish they'd change.
Mm-hmm.
Just understand this is what it is, and it's okay. But then you'd also said, but there is, maybe without this, probably putting a timeline hope to it, there is this reality, though, that over time, we have become more and more alike.
Mm-hmm.
And that without making that now the goal and expectation is to be alike, it's just kind of happened with time and experience.
And that's the Lord's work in us.
Yeah.
It's so obvious that that's the Lord's work, that he's real,
yeah.
You know, and we acknowledge that on a regular basis. You know, Lord, without you in our lives, no telling where we would have ended up. And we're just so glad that you live inside of each one of us. And it's that beautiful triangle of, you know, the Lord in the center and working through each one of our lives in the other one's life. That's just a great picture of oneness.
Mm-hmm.
I see the Lord in her life. Mm-hmm. All the time.
Back at you.
And we've just been through a year and a half of cancer and chemotherapy and radiation and neuropathy and all of that stuff that she's gone through. So as a result, we've both gone through it together. And we've just really sought the Lord every day, 10 times a day, through that whole process. And it's just really brought us a lot closer. We got to the place where we would enjoy our trips to Palm Springs for her treatments.
Because they were like little dates.
On the way there and on the way back.
Yeah.
It just became a very precious time for us.
Which is so different, because when we first were married, one of the biggest tensions in our marriage was Walter's an athlete, so he was always playing some kind of game. And I was like, aren't you supposed to be with me? We're married. Am I that uninteresting? You know, and then moving to now, it's like, oh, I'd rather be with you than going out and doing that, you know? And I mean, talk about a shift.
That's the truth.
It is.
That is the truth. We just enjoy each other's company so much.
And I've learned to like...
We'd rather be together. Now we're playing pickleball. It's just hard to keep those pickles bouncing.
They're so oddly shaped.
That's right.
Weird. Huh? Oh, that's awesome. Well, when you think, this is one question I had. A lot of times you'll hear, when I'm talking to couples, I'll hear them say things like, I don't feel equipped to be a good wife or to be a good husband, meaning marriage skills, you know, I'm not good in these areas, and therefore I falter, and that affects both of us, you know, etc. So talk to that a little bit. A, what would you say when you, early stages of marriage, would you say these were some skills that we had that we relied upon and we were grateful for? And conversely, these are skills we really had to grow in that weren't there inherently, but needed to be a part of our marriage.
what skills did we have?
Yeah, well, that's just it. We really didn't have a clue, and I especially had no clue. I remember one Saturday when we were in Columbus, Ohio, and I was on the way in a car full of guys to go play touch football on a Saturday morning, and our senior pastor asked me, he said, "What's Gail up to today?" And I said, "Oh, she has a doctor's appointment."
My first doctor's appointment when I found out I was pregnant.
Okay.
And he said, "What kind of doctor's appointment?" And I said, "Well, you know, she's pregnant. It's her first doctor's appointment." He slammed on the brakes. He said, "What?" He says, "You're going to go play touch football and your wife is going to this appointment by herself?" He says, "No, you're not either." So we turned around, and sure enough, as we got back to this little house we were renting, she was walking out and she'd been crying. I could see that she was upset. And I didn't have the first clue. So, you know, part of the answer is the Lord just kept bringing people into my life, teaching me what I would never have even thought about it.
Yeah, it wasn't even on your radar. Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. you know, I went to every appointment with her after that, with all of our three children, and by the third one, I could have delivered that baby myself. But I appreciate that, and I've passed that on to a lot of other guys who didn't have the clue either.
Yeah, good. So that's good. On the one hand, saying, I didn't come really prepared for a lot, and there were a lot of things that were just right over my head related to being a husband. So there was a lot of learning. So does that then press on the importance of mentors? Press on the importance
of absolutely, for both of us. Me having women who had been a few stages ahead in mothering and wiving. Is that a word?
Yes.
Oh, that made such a difference in our lives. Such a difference. Or just having others that are going through the same thing you're going through.
At the same stage, yeah.
And talking through it and getting perspective. And but not turning it into a too much of a commiserating bashing.
Yeah. There's a line right there.
There is such a line. And that is one thing. I don't know how we got it, but we did... We did know the line. We did respect the line of our marriage and not share too much
too
outside.
Much. Yeah.
And we respected it in fighting.
Mm-hmm.
We knew what the line was. You know,
we had many opportunities to need to and to find people to go and share with, to have other people that could understand better what you needed to talk about than I could.
Yeah.
And then I had my guys that... There were mentors at one time, and now accountability guys.
But we encouraged that. We didn't see that as a negative.
Yeah, we knew that you getting clarity is going to help both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably can't help you with this like she or he could.
I'm glad that she has her friends now.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather her talk with them than there's some of that stuff I don't want to hear about.
But I agree, though, with what you're saying. You kind of, in doing that, you could rest in the fact that that you knew the other wasn't going to go bash you to them. Because that would probably change that game a little bit.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
I don't know what happens when you go share.
Sometimes we laugh, but no bashing.
So within that, then, let's talk about that, where how many times couples would say, A, I didn't have a good example to watch. I know I can learn from a bad example, but I need now mentors to help me in a good way. And then they will say, but we just don't have any.
Mm.
Talk a little bit to that when you interact with people who would say, they might even say, well, your guys' marriage in a sense was favored or blessed because you had people you could talk to. I don't have anyone to talk to. I don't have a mentor. What would you say to someone who would be in that position or think that?
The quickest way to find them is through the local church.
Yeah.
I really believe
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. That's where we are.
That's God's design, I believe. It's the quickest way to find people who believe the same thing that you do. And hopefully, you know, we're getting better all the time as a church at reaching out and caring for people that are hurting. We're always learning how to do that better.
Yeah.
Classes.
The small groups.
Mm-hmm.
We went to our small group last night, and not all the couples were there, but of the three couples that were there, it was just very, very deep sharing, and we had some great prayer time together. And we were all touched by the fact that we had these other two couples there that we could be open with about some of these things.
Mm.
So we really have benefited greatly by being around godly people through connections, primarily through the local church. Not always, but we've just really met so many wonderful people through the churches we've been involved with.
And going to marriage seminars when we were younger. We went to marriage seminars.
So you did things outside
We did things purposefully. Yeah,
to get more information. Because I think some of the couples, when I talk to them about marriage mentors, they would look at this as though, well, that was really neat for you and you had this advantage. But I try to keep coming back to what they might think is that you had people naturally come to you and say, I bet you'd love me to mentor you.
No, heavens, never.
Comes from the bottom, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning the mentoree is going and making those approaches. It's a state of humility. Mm-hmm. I'm recognizing I need help. I'm recognizing I don't have all the answers. But it's me pursuing people. Yeah. And like you've said, how rare within a local church that someone being pursued to be a mentor would go, nah. I mean, that's really rare. Most times, how could I help?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's really, it begins with that initiation.
Yes.
On the couple looking for the help. They need to see that rather than go, I've been here available for years. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, that's not how it goes. You pursue and let that person then pour into you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And vice versa, though. We had there are people who are in our stage now that welcomed us in, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. I think it's both. It's a little mm-hmm. bit of both. If you're an older couple who have a good marriage, don't hold that to yourself.
Yeah. And you're right. Vice versa, there could be some who would say, I'd be happy to be involved in a mentoring relationship. No one asks.
Right. So
and
go
so
out and
it's almost as though I want us as a church to be better matchmakers,
yes.
you know, to try to help people
yes.
go, okay, don't wait for the other. You know, let's figure out how to have these conversations.
Yeah. It's not hard to find young couples who are just really eager to have an older couple in their lives. And we have 5 or 6 younger couples that we connect with on a regular basis that kind of look up to us like parent figures in many ways.
Mm-hmm. And some are here and some are around the country that have lived with us or lived life with us in some way and have moved on, but we're still connected and still talking to them when they're having troubles. And
we know they need a phone call from time to time.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, how are you doing? Just checking up on you, what's going on in your life. And it's
how are you getting along? We always say, how are you getting along?
Yeah. Are you spending time in prayer together? I always ask that because it's so important.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I just have one last question. Mm-hmm. You guys have been awesome this morning. Thank you. Just words of wisdom for couples struggling in their oneness. What would you say to someone who's saying, you know, this, I feel isolated, or I feel like we're not on the same page, or I feel like we're not for each other? What would just be a thought to say, at least start with this? You don't solve that whole problem, but here's one thing at least to prioritize.
Yeah.
Have fun together. Go out purposely to have fun together. One of the things that we would do, even if we were fighting and fussing, we would still go out and have fun.
Cool.
You can do that. You can set it aside and say, okay, that's our problem, but we can still do this together and enjoy that.
And for those couples who can't do that, or they won't do it, I would say find something to be thankful for in prayer.
Right, it's hard to be
disconnected. And say, Lord, thank you for this. You know, we don't like each other right now, but thank you that we've made it for 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Or we don't even like our kids right now, but thank you for them because we love them. We don't like the house that we're living in, but thank you that we have a house to live in.
Yeah.
Or just, Lord, please help us. We need your help. Amen. And I tell couples, if you say that prayer, I believe you're talking to the creator of the universe, who's very pleased to be invited into the problem.
Yeah.
And the problems are going to get worse as the longer you exclude him from being a part of the
mm-hmm.
solution.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Gail's suggestion, too, because I encourage couples all the time to leave the stuff on the shelf and go out, and even if you don't want to talk to each other, go watch a good movie together and share a box of popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about the movie.
Talk about the movie. Find that you can actually have an evening together without fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And then have another one, and then have another one. Or go and talk with someone who can help you work through it.
Take a walk together. You know, do something that's neutral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the expectations are low, but we're together.
Yeah, and then gradually that builds. You know, that builds on itself. And let the other person off the hook.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give them credit for where they're trying. I think too many people say, but they're not here. They put that but in there. But they're not here. yes, look at all this, though, mm-hmm. you know. And
I was taking that for granted, the growth, because they're still not where I'd like them to
right.
be. And
yet.
Losing sight of that. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Not
yeah.
there yet.
Yeah. yeah. Instead yeah. of, wow, but look who he is right now. Yeah. You know, that's he's trying. He's out there hustling.
We've talked for years about our two praise gaps, we call them. It's like we praise the Lord for where we are versus where we used to be.
Yes.
That's a really good one.
We may
not be where we'd like to be, but we're certainly not where we were.
Where we were.
The more difficult one is we praise him for where we are versus where we could have been. Mm-hmm. If we'd kept going down another trail, or if we get hurt and start going down another trail, and how quickly you can get into a wrong spot. So we're very thankful for where we are versus where we might have ended up and still could.
Yeah.
If we take our eyes off of the Lord, we're just like any other couple. We could end up on the wrong track very quickly.
You guys, I've so appreciated time with you today. Just personally, it's been just a pleasure, but I know for the people listening, they're going to be just so encouraged. So thank you. Thank you for who you are. Thank you for your investment at Trinity and how long you have been investing. This is the very one's very small piece of your ministry to couples, and we know that through different areas of both in being involved as mentors as well as leading classes, having a heart for our marriage ministries, and being invested. So just thank you for that.
Thank you.
Your investment in marriages has been going on for decades, and we're just grateful to get this interview with you today. So thanks so much for your
time.
Thank you. Amazing.